Blog Talk Radio.
And now, on the African American Athlete Sports Network, it's Express Yourself with hosts T. Ramon and Sko.
Express Yourself!
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalists Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Hello again, this is Express Yourself with T-Ramon and Sko. I'm Tim Turner, and along with my co-host Roscoe Nance, we hope to have another hour of interesting sports talk and talk of things that probably aren't in the headlines in sports this week. But again, we had another fine weekend of college professional football, had some really exciting golf, had a couple of wins for some of our teams, for some of the people who were associated with the team with this broadcast. We have the Detroit Lions knocked off the Pats on Sunday night, and Pittsburgh Steelers on Monday night took care of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which I know makes co-host Roscoe Nance happy. So, Roscoe, bringing you in, talk about it.
I wouldn't exactly say we took care of them. We got the win. But, you know, as I always say, all wins go in the W column, no matter how heart-stopping they are. But, you know, it wasn't all – you know, such a great weekend because my Golden Tigers took it on the chin at home, no less, to Missouri S&T out of Rolla, Missouri, and that's not Savings and Trust. That was an actual football team.
I was about to say, you played a bank.
It was a real football team, and they kind of took it to the bank on a 16-7 offense. Looks like the offense still struggles to score, but hey. It wasn't a conference game, so we still have that carried out in front of us. We'll be okay. I'm just looking to October 6th is
a lot of
the
folks
day.
Start conference play this week, right?
Right. But October 6th will be the telltale date for the Golden Tigers.
I wonder why. I think hopefully the Maroon Tigers of Morehouse College will still be undefeated by then. They had to come from behind, and I think they had a Hail Mary on the last play of the game. Up in Chicago to beat Miles College. It was on NCAA.com on the D2 tab on its website. It was the number one play in Division II football this past weekend. Morehouse is Hail Mary. Tigers are 4-0, and they play at Kentucky State this week. And
we're pretty
happy about that.
They should come in 5-0 without too much problem. I tell you, Miles has been playing in some tough luck. I think that was their second consecutive last-minute, last-play defeat. And they're winless this season. And, Coach Ruffin, Reginald Ruffin, has done an outstanding job down there, but he's falling on some hard times. They're not quite going back to the Miles of old, but they're struggling right now. But I'm sure he'll turn it around and get things rolling again.
Well, that'll explain the pictures I saw online last week of some really super dejected kids from Miles sitting in the airport waiting to go back home. So, but there's plenty of football stuff to go around, plenty of baseball, basketball, all kinds of sports, golf. But we want you guys to be part of the discussion. So chime in and give us a call at 929-477-1209. That's 929-477-1209. And we have up first tonight our guest, one of the legends of the SWAC. We'll have him in here as a Mississippi Valley State quarterback, Parnell Dickerson. Played in Valley, then played in the NFL, and now he's going on to be a life coach. And we just want to bring on Mr. Dickerson this evening to Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Sko.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Are you there, Parnell? Good.
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Peter. What's happening?
Not much. How you guys doing? I've been listening into your show. And quite interesting to hear you talking about Miles College. That's kind of up in my neck of the woods.
Yeah. They still speak your name in hushed and reverent tones in the Birmingham area.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we want to start off, but, you know, just by talking about, you know, your career, you know, with the Tampa Bay Bucks back in the 70s when there weren't a lot of, you know, black quarterbacks in the NFL during that time, and just the attitude and the kind of obstacles that you faced.
Right. Well, I tell you, I'll start with attitude first. Very thankful, you know, that I had that opportunity to have a chance to make it to the NFL. But, of course, during my time, there was only Shaq Harris and Joe Gilliam. And, of course, Marlon Briscoe had been in Denver, but those were the only ones that were in the league during the time that I was there. So it's kind of like going back, way back to, you know, Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks days. And what we did is, I'm not saying it's that significant as that, but, you know, that was just a few of us, and we had to kind of lay the groundwork for those that were coming behind. So was there a lot of difficult times and situations that we had? Most definitely. But, you know, coming from an HBCU and the coach that I had and the way my parents raised me, you know, we were always taught to take advantage of the opportunities. It's never easy. We are the type of people that can do so much with so little until, you know, we get to the point where we mindset, we think we can do anything with nothing. So that was kind of my mindset, regardless to, you know, the obstacle that I had to go through to get there, coming in with an expansion team. You know, I was happy to have had an opportunity, and I was going to make sure that I made it because I knew there was somebody coming behind me.
Right. Well, let's fast forward to today. And you know, I'm sure you saw the quote from the superintendent in the Houston School District about, you know, the black quarterback, Deshaun Watson, with the Texans, and how you can't, you know, count on a black quarterback. So I know there are more black quarterbacks now than ever before and more coming along. But with an attitude like that, can you really say that the thinking has really changed a whole lot in some areas?
Now, you said he said that you can't count, on a black quarterback.
Right.
Well, you know, that's
probably... It was a reference to Deshaun Watson made a couple of bad plays, and then he was saying he was through with the Titans, and that he was through with the Texans. He was through with them because you can't really trust a black quarterback. Deshaun held onto the ball, some poor clock management. He made a mistake, essentially. And so he just said the thing about all black quarterbacks.
Well, has this guy ever played quarterback in the NFL before? Has he ever played quarterback anywhere?
I seriously doubt it.
Well, then a comment coming from a person like that, you know, that it has no value as far as I'm concerned.
Well, but the egregious thing about it to me is that he's the superintendent of a school district that has black kids.
Yeah, but what kind of superintendent?
This is his attitude about blacks.
Yeah, but I'm saying, what kind of superintendent is he? You know, whether he's a superintendent in a historically African American district or other, I mean, what kind of superintendent is he?
Well,
when people make those kind of statements like that, I think before I judge them, I look at kind of where they're at and where they come from before I get all over, because sometimes, you know, we open our mouths without thinking.
Well, we can also say that he's past tense as well, because I think in the last day or so he has resigned and he's apologized to those that were offended, as if that wasn't an offensive statement to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, that just adds credence to what I say. You got somebody talking about something that they don't really know about. You know what I mean? I'm not. There was a lot of things I'm sure said about me as well, but hey. It's you have to consider the source. That's what my parents used to say.
Well, the thing that kind of gets my hackles up is that the position that he's in, and to have that, to think that way, it's not good. It's not good at all. Because,
no, there's nothing good. There's nothing good about non-encouragement. African Americans that are in positions that we normally not in, and when you look at the slate of African American quarterbacks that have been in the league, including myself, we've all been good, but you know, circumstances has a lot to do with how far you go. You know what I mean?
So true.
Going all the way back to Marlon Briscoe, Marlon did a fantastic job with in the situation that he was in. What would he have said about Marlon? James Shaq Harris with the Buffalo, when he first went to the Buffalo Bills. Death threats, and he still prevailed. You know, Joe Gilliam going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. What he dealt with. Me coming to Tampa Bay to an expansion team. You know what I mean? You don't get to the NFL as an African-American quarterback if you're not a great athlete or a great quarterback. But what you got on, what he has to understand is what makes a quarterback great is the people around him, the system that he's in. You can take a great quarterback, and put him in a system that's not conducive to his abilities, and he'll look just as bad. So that's why I say when you know, people make all kind of, you know, different comments about athletes, I hear them, but, you know, a lot of times they really don't understand what it is that they're talking about. They're just talking. So that's what I was, you know, meaning. I wouldn't bash him. I'll just say I don't think he really understands how all of that works.
You're kind. You're very kind.
Now, how much of a help was it that you coming into the league and having John McKay as your coach and understanding? He seems like, because of his Southern Cal background, he didn't have the prejudices maybe some other NFL coaches would have had.
Well, I wouldn't say he had it, but I had other coaches that had it. You know what I mean? Because John McKay was a coach that, you know, that you dealt with every now and then. You had your own individual coach that you dealt with. And that was kind of how it was back then when I was playing. And being that we were an expansion team, it was an experiment. The system and everything nothing had been tested and proven in the NFL. In college, yes. But the NFL, none of that had been tested or proven. We were the test tubes.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how that was. But
wow.
You know, I walk away thinking that I had a part in some of the other guys, you know, coming behind, because I did what was expected of me despite you know, the circumstances that I had to deal with. That's just kind of how we were built back then.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents raised us back then. Hey, you know, you just want the door open. You'll go and get what you need in there. You don't want nobody to give you anything.
Yeah. Well, who were your position coaches back then? Was it Wayne Funce on that staff? Was he an offensive coach then?
No, Wayne Funce was a defensive back coach.
Okay, defensive back coach.
My coach. My coach for a while was John Rouse, who was a great guy, who was the same guy that had James Shaq Harris.
Buffalo.
And then my other coach was a guy by the name of Bill Nelson.
Bill Nelson, the old SC quarterback, played for the Steelers.
No, he played in Cleveland.
Okay, Cleveland. Okay,
Cleveland Browns.
From Southern Cal, he played for McKay at Southern Cal, I believe.
I think he did.
Yeah.
Now, you as a quarterback, now how do you look at this year's roughing the passer rule, and how the kind of play the defensive players were allowed to do around quarterbacks when you played. Look at it then and look at it now. Do you?
Well, there is no comparison to today and when I played. If today you can slide. When I played, if you slid, you got piled on. So there's no comparison. I got my knee injured because I got hit on the knee, below the knee. So it was tough. It was tough back then. There's no comparison today. But to get back to your question about how they're officiating now, of course, me being a quarterback, you know, the lighter you can make it, you know, the better I'm going to think it is. But it's a different game today than it was when I was playing. You think about now, every linebacker, that's a linebacker, is 250 pounds or more. Every offensive lineman is 300 and some pounds. Every defensive back is bench pressing 250 pounds 20 or 30 times. So, and every defensive back is running 4.45, 4.4, 4.2s. So it's just a different game, and they, you know, I guess they, you've got to do something to keep people on the field, but how much of that you do that's going to help? I mean, I couldn't say football is football. It's hit. You hit it. But you know, not being able to hit below the waist, you know, that's a good thing. You know, you save guys' knees sometimes. Not hitting a guy, you know, clothesline a guy up on the head, that keeps a guy hit, keeps his mind, you know, in the game a lot longer. But you know, I mean, it's changing, and there's no comparison. You can't compare the eras.
Well, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
What was the hardest hit that you took, and who delivered it?
The hardest lick that I ever took was right there in Itabena, Mississippi, against Prairie View A&M and N.
Do you recall
that was the hardest? There were two brothers that played for Prairie View. One of them name was Jimmy Wolf, and the other one name was Jesse, the Wolf brothers. That was the hardest lick that I've ever gotten in all of my time.
I mean, did you see stars and circles and black and yellow colors?
Well, yeah, I saw them and much more, but during that time, on our team, you know, we always had our film session Sunday night. And I knew I had to get up and get to that sideline, because if I had laid on that field, I was going to be the joke for the next week. That's kind of how, you know, we had fun playing. And if you got knocked out, hey, they were going to play that back in the meeting, back and forth. So all I could think about was getting to the sideline. So I did make it to the sideline, because I didn't want to be the brunt of the jokes for the next week.
What about the swag in that time when you played? It had to be extremely competitive, and every week you're facing somebody that could potentially make you see stars, or great offensive players.
Correct, offense and defense. My freshman year, Jackson State, the defense Jackson State had, I think they had seven guys to get drafted off their defense. Grambling had seven or six guys to get drafted off their defense. Alcorn had the number one defense in the nation during that time, my freshman year. So every year I played against two, three, four, five first-round draft picks on every team just about every team that I played. There were one or two on every team that you play. So the competition, and again, I don't compare eras, But the competition back during the time, well, look at the National Football League Hall of Fame and look at the Black College Football Hall of Fame. I played against all those guys. So it was some top notch first level athletes in SWAC during that time. Robert Brazil, Walter Payton, Gary Big Hand Johnson, James Hunter, Lawrence Pillars, Rodney Allen. There were a plethora of guys. Vernon Perry, Robert Brazil, Jackie Slater. The list can go on and on.
So tell me, how did you get your nickname Pay Dirt? Who gave that to you? Where did it come from?
Well, that was one of my he's still a good buddy of mine now. We used to have 7-on-7. And we were very, very serious about 7-on-7, you know, at Valley. I was, because we threw the ball a lot. And this guy, his name is Mayor Robert Smith. He's the mayor of Columbus, Mississippi. He mentioned Pay Dirt. And that just kind of stuck with me. And when I came to Tampa, it was written somewhere in this sports reporter named Tom McEwen got it, and that's how when he first wrote about me, he wrote Parnell Pay Dirt Dickinson. And it's been that ever since.
Okay, yeah, that's McEwen is down in Tampa.
And they were saying because I had a way of getting the ball in the end zone so frequently. And that's why they called me Pay Dirt.
Okay.
That I could get it in the end zone.
That's
in 4 years, I think I had 89 touchdowns.
Wow.
In 4 years. Yeah. I had never really looked at that until my statistics came out during the Black College Football Hall of Fame. You know, now that I'm almost 66 years old, I said, wow, that was a lot of touchdowns and close to 8,000 yards in 4 years. I said, that's a lot of yards, too. But, you know, you don't think about that, you know, when you're doing that kind of stuff. I've never been a big statistical guy. I've always liked to win, but I was unfortunate. I've never been on a championship team, but I've coached some championship teams, but I never played on one, but I played on some good teams. And so I just never was big on how many yards I threw for, how many touchdowns I threw for, that kind of stuff, because I really enjoyed it. I really had fun. And I had some good coaches. I had some great teammates, and we really – it was hard. I mean, in the Delta, in Mississippi, where it's hot, mosquitoes, but Coach Davis Weatherby was my coach. I had a good coach. We worked hard, but we loved doing what we were doing, the group that I was with. Because we all are still great friends right now. You're talking about almost 50 years, 46 years. We still are good friends. Me and my receivers, my offensive line, guys on the defense, we get together once a year, every year.
Well, do you ever think about how you might fare if you were playing under today's rules that are so quarterback and offense friendly?
I was asked that question by Charles Davis at the Black College Football Hall of Fame, and I told him, I said, you know, I've never looked back. I've never thought about, you know, I've had people to tell me, several people to tell me, if you was coming out now, you know, you'd be a first-round draft pick. But I'm not coming out now, so it's hard for me to visualize me, you know, then versus now. You know what I'm saying? But I'll say this, and I'm not one to brag, I mean, I wouldn't back down from nothing to nobody. You know, I'm very competitive. I'll tell you that. Because when I got to Mississippi Valley, I think there were 7 or 8 quarterbacks when I got there, and I ended up starting as a freshman.
Now, as a competitor, would you ever quit in the midst of competition, or do you, and I say that trying to preface the situation that just happened here at Clemson, senior quarterback who's playing pretty well, has just lost his job to a freshman quarterback who is really an outstanding quarterback who probably is better than the senior quarterback, but the senior quarterback did nothing to lose his job. Now, I understand that the senior quarterback, Kelly Bryant's going to transfer away from Clemson. What would you think of a situation like that?
Well, here's the deal. I never would have quit. Even at my age now, I wouldn't quit because my father said something to me years ago. He said that the easiest thing in the world to do is to quit. He said it takes no effort for that. But circumstances has caused these guys to have to make some decision because the game is just different. It's totally different than it was when I was playing. Now, again, it's hard for me to move myself up into this situation, but I just don't think nobody would have been better than me. Personally. You know what I mean? I really don't.
So in other words, you would have been the freshman taking the senior's job.
And that's what happened in my case. I was a freshman, and there were 6 or 7 quarterbacks there when I got there. 2 seniors. But I ended up starting about the 3rd or the 4th series in the first game we played Alabama A&M. So I just don't think nobody would have took my job. I'm gonna be honest with you. You had to been a bad dude to do that. Because I put everything I had. I studied, I worked out, I threw the ball, I looked at film, I did it all. I mean, nobody didn't give me anything. I came from a little small high school out of Brighton, Alabama, called Brighton High School. And I ended up going in.
No, go ahead and finish your thought.
And I ended up going to Mississippi Valley, and I got to Mississippi Valley because when Coach Weatherby first came to see me, I didn't realize he was coming to see me after the high school game. When I got home, he was at my house. But I was trying to get out of the house to go to a little get-together that we were having after the game. And I shook his hand. I didn't shake his hand that I was going to Valley, but I shook his hand, and that's what I said. And so when it came time to choose schools, my father reminded me that you shook this man's hand. He said, son, when you give a man your word, that's your bond. So you've already decided where you're going to school. So I ended up at Mississippi Valley.
So in your mind, where did you want to go?
Well, I'm not sure because I had scholarships everywhere and a few basketball scholarships too. Mm-hmm. You know, I could have been at A&M. I could have even been down to Tuskegee. You know, I had scholarships there. Alcorn, Tennessee State, Jackson. I mean, I probably could have went anywhere. But, like I say, I didn't even have a chance to even visit another school because I shook Coach Weatherby's hand. And, you know, and I said this at my Hall of Fame induction as well. That was the best decision that my father made for me. I didn't make it. He made it, and it was the right one. Because, you know, I got my degree. I played 4 years of ball. I got a chance to go to the NFL. When my father handed me off to him, I was a boy. But when he handed me back to my dad, I was a man. My wife, I got my wife there. My son was born there. So that it couldn't have happened no better for me.
Well, that's a great story.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It could not have happened, you know, any better for me. But to go back to your question on the quarterbacks, see, things are so different now, and you know, guys, their main focus is to win. There is no other focus. But when I was in college, the focus was to develop people, children, and win in that order. Because when your parent handed you off to somebody else, they knew that they was handing you off to an extension of their family. And that's what HBCUs are. What was an extension of your family. When your parents handed you off to that coach understood he was now responsible for continuing what your parents had started. Yeah, you playing football, but when my boy come back, I want to see the development that he should.
Well, I know you're, you know, close to the Valley program, you know, and you still follow the HBCU. So do you see that same thing happening now, or has it kind of gotten away from that in your estimation, from what you can see? You know, from
No, it's not the same. It's not the same, and that's, you know, that's what, you know, we've got to get back. You know, our programs, our athletic programs are struggling financially. You know, the revenues has declined so much over the years, and it's for several reasons, you know. One being that, you know, funding for HBCUs locally and state and federal is totally different than it is for other institutions. That calls for, you know, decrease in student enrollment. It also has a drastic effect on who you can hire to continue to do good things, you know, with the program. And then the most pivotal part of it is that, you know, we as alums, we've got to get back to what it was when we were in school, Roscoe. You know, our parents were involved in every aspect of our life and what we did and where we went, and they helped. And we have to I'll use Mississippi Valley as an example. We're a 67-year-old university. I don't know if we have that alum that could write us a check for $1 million or $2 million for our football program or basketball or athletic program in general. But think about you got a 67-year-old university. Think about if 25% of the alums that have come through there would give just $100 a month or $25 a month, but did it religiously, consistently. And with the little bit that we have now, what you think it would do for that program?
It could do wonders.
It wouldn't take a whole lot for us to be attracted to our athletes that are going to other schools. You know, we've got, you know, and the foundation has been laid. We've got a bowl game that's the first bowl game that's being played during bowl season, and it's shown in every country where there's an Air Force base. The only one on. So now you can be seen. You got a Black College Football Hall of Fame, which is going to be in Canton, Ohio next year, where they're spending over $300 million to renovate and remodel and get things fixed to where when we get there, we're going to be paraded as what we are, the great. But think about if our programs, if we were giving, if we, you know, like our parents, Roscoe, they didn't wait for other people to do something for us. They did what they could for us. And we've got to get back to that. You know, our university, we've got to go and sacrifice our kids to play superior athlete that we normally would have for $100,000 or $200,000. And, you know, you just never know. You could get one of them. You can get one of them paralyzed or hurt real bad just playing against, you know, in the SWAC. But the chances are greater when you're playing with, you know, with such superior athletes at every position. You know, I mean, you got to do what you got to do, but it's not something that I'm proud that we do, because we're sacrificing our young athletes. And, you know, I don't like it, but you got to do what you got to do.
Yes, you do. And with that, Peter, we're going to wrap it up, and we certainly appreciate you coming on. And, you know, you're very insightful, and, you know, thanks again.
Yes, I appreciate you inviting me, and thank you guys so much.
Okay, take care, and we'll see you down the road.
Okay, thank you.
And see, we don't have guys like him around anymore that's pretty much are so confident in themselves. It's like, look, they wouldn't beat me out.
Hey, you know, that's when football was football.
Yeah. The thing about him saying, yeah, if he goes sliding down, they just pile on top of him. It's none of that giving yourself up business.
Yeah, you give yourself up all right.
Yeah.
Give up your life.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we just talked about SWAC football from back in the day, and as it is up to now, you know, you got this the huge season. I mean, I guess you're starting out conference play this week after last week. Pretty much everybody's weaning out of these money games and all this other stuff. We got one more game on the schedule, I think, for the SWAC this week, and I think one more for the MEAC, where you got UAPB is at Florida International. Now,
when is the last time somebody scored 100 points?
I can't recall when the last time somebody scored 100. I know somebody scored 90 on UAPB and 91 on some school in the Mid-Atlantic early this past weekend, but not 100. Maybe that's been a while.
Well, stay tuned.
Is this the guy Alabama used to be at Alabama, Lane Kiffin's team, Florida International?
I think he's Florida Atlantic.
Florida Atlantic. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
He's Florida Atlantic.
That's going to be scary. If
it were Florida Atlantic, it would be guaranteed 100.
Yeah. It's tough to see how these cats come out of here and have such bad showings, but it's going to wrap up now. It looks like you're going more in the conference play, the SWAC head. Games last week where Southern knocked off A&M. A&M is on a kind of a skid since ending the season fast last year. And pretty much they don't need somebody they beaten. I don't know. I don't think they won anybody yet, beaten anybody yet. I want to make sure that. I just know Southern is now 2-2 on the season and 1-0 in conference play after they knocked off A&M
29-27. Yeah. Yeah. Southern fans aren't really pleased with what's going on. You know, they feel like, especially last week, they should have won that game more handily. And they are really not pleased that they've lost to Grambling and Alcorn the past two seasons, and they have Alcorn coming up this weekend, and it's their homecoming. So, Jaguar Nation, they're a little antsy down there, a little antsy. So,
and it's kind of early to be antsy. I guess they're looking down the road at what they got coming after them. As we mentioned, the aforementioned UAPB, they got crushed last week by Prairie View, which seems like they're going to be a factor in the SWAC West this year.
Well,
62-13.
They have a big game coming up this weekend with. Grambling in Dallas at the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean that game, well, it's really big in numbers as well. I mean, that game draws so well. I mean, you know, upwards of 70,000 every year. So, and with Prairie View having designs on perhaps winning the SWAC West, is going to be even bigger. And I think they probably feel that Grambling might be a little bit vulnerable this year after losing Devontae Kincaid, the quarterback, and some other guys off that squad last year. They feel that this could be their year. And this kid, Dewanye Tucker, I mean, he's
right.
Tearing it up. He's leading FCS in rushing, and he's a small kid, along the lines of Tariq Cohen, but he's tearing it up in the quarterback. They have really good offense going there. Eric Dooley is the coach there, and he's a highly regarded offensive coach. They could have easily won their first two games against Rice.
They should have beaten Rice.
And from what I understand, I forget who the second opponent was, but they could have won that game as well.
Moving away from my swag a little bit, there may be another opportunity for an upset of a HBCU of a D1 school. Tennessee State is playing at home with us in town. They're playing against Vanderbilt, and that's an interesting matchup right there.
Yeah, I tell you what, Tennessee State needs to go back to Hale Stadium and get folk in the hole, and they'd be guaranteed an undefeated season if they could do that. But, yeah, that has the potential for being an interesting game because Tennessee State looks like they're, capable of having a good year. I think it may have hurt them a little bit last week that they, lost those two games to the weather and they had two
right.
mistakes. But they did come away with a victory, 41-40 over I believe it was Eastern Illinois. And
right.
Maybe they can find that rhythm and do some things against Vanderbilt. That's a game worth keeping your eyes on.
Well, look at it as them having fresher legs when they came out there against Eastern Illinois. They hadn't played in 2 weeks, so maybe that was a big deal. Flip over a little bit over to the MEAC, where I don't know if A&T got caught looking ahead or what. But, Morgan State knocked them off 16-13.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of that conspiracy to make me look bad after I predicted an undefeated season for A&T.
Get a kiss of death. Yeah, thank you.
Well, but I did my job. I picked the right team. I picked the right team. They just didn't hold up their end of the bargain. I did my thing. But that was pretty much a shocker with Morgan being winless and being picked to finish last in the conference. But it looks like A&T's offense struggled a little bit. A lot. And hold an opponent to 16 points, you pretty much expect to win that game in today's football. I'm sure they'll bounce back.
Well, the good thing about it for them, those cats, they don't have a whole week to lay around thinking about that loss. They play tomorrow night at home against the South Carolina State.
And the other thing, too, is that game did not count as a conference game. So they're still, in good shape for the conference championship. But the winning streak and the undefeated season. I'm sure while they didn't necessarily, talk about those things, they had them in mind, and they couldn't help but be aware of it because of so much talk about it. So. And maybe that will take some of the pressure off when they'll go on and, finish the season off, strong. But, the defense is really going to, the defense is always going to do its thing. It's just a matter of, the offense and the quarterback getting hit in stride.
Well, you're true. I think probably the most competitive game was Indianapolis at the Circle City Classic, where Howard had to stave off Bethune-Cookman. They beat him 41-35.
Yeah, that was a real shootout. It harkened back to the old days of the Circle City Classic when they had some real shootouts, some real offensive fireworks there. And in the early days, the Circle City Classic was really, one of the two or three, you know, premier classics going, even from the very start when Mississippi Valley and Grambling played in the very first one in I think it was in 84. Jerry Rice's I think it was 83 Rice's junior year, and he came back and played Tennessee State his senior year. But that game, it has dropped off. But you know, they're getting good matchups again. That will, you know, helps with the attendance there a lot. You know, teams with you know, some name recognition and quality programs, so that'll help in that regard.
I know when I was covering the SWAC, I had back to back games up there with Jackson State, and they sold out. That was in the Hoosier Dome. They sold it out both times, and that was quite a weekend. You know, BET made it an event back in the day when BET used to do HBCU games every weekend. I mean, it was quite a show that Indianapolis put on, and hopefully that's the case going forward as they try to get back into it. We want to slide a little bit over to the SIEC, where we could talk about Morris Maroon Tigers, 23-21 over Miles, last second win. They're undefeated, and they're going into Kentucky State, and then you got other things where you have, like, that's like I said, one more bad payday game that Clark played. Clark played at Kennesaw State, which is also Metropolitan Atlanta. They lost 70-13, and I think somebody said they got paid $45,000 for that for that win, for that loss. And that was that's, you know, to alumni, that has to be really an incredulous thing that they got so little to get beaten down by so much.
Yeah, you know, it just makes you wonder, you know, what people are thinking and why they do the things that they do. I don't know. It's baffling. And, you know, it's just truly baffling why they would do that. You know, they could have played anybody. Made more than that, or as much or more. And I don't really see what they gained from it.
$45,000. But beyond that, they didn't. But you know, if you guys want to chime in on this, it's the number to call in is 929-477-1209. That's 929-477-1209. And we're just trying to chop it up talking about HBCU football right now. And getting beat by 47 points, 57 points, I think. Excuse me, is not something you want to do. But it's the experience. A lot of times people will say that they do it for the experience, and if nobody comes out of there injured, it prepares them for what they have coming up. And they go from Clark goes from Kennesaw State, which is supposed to be one of the powers of FCS, to playing host to Allen College, wherever that is.
I believe this is their first year, so Clark will get in the win column, should get in the win column this week against Allen. They've brought football back, so you know that's a good scheduling move. They probably should have tried to get Allen on the schedule a little bit earlier in the year, and that would make it a little bit more, you know, palatable. You know, maybe make that the first or second game, so you'll get off to a decent start and keep hope alive, you know, going forward. But you know, when you start out 0-4, you know, it's, you know, pretty much a done deal. You know, that your season is not going to be pretty, not going to be very pretty.
Well, they got one more. The SIC has one more game sort of like that, where Fort Valley, they're hosting University of Virginia Lynchburg, and then for everybody else, their conference games, you got Lane is at Tuskegee, Miles is at Albany State, Benedict is at Central State, and Morehouse is at Kentucky State. So most of the conference is going to start their conference play, where you have these other guys still have a little bit of a warm up before they start their play.
That Albany State Miles game, that's interesting, because both of them have struggled, and you know they need to win badly, especially Miles. Like, you know, it was mentioned earlier, you know, how they're winless, and you know they had been for the past several years they've been either first or second in the West, and the main challenger to Tuskegee in the West and in the conference for that matter. So this is a disappointing start for them. But you know, by the nature of the Western Division, it's still likely going to come down to the last game, you know, Tuskegee and Miles, determine who will represent the West in the championship game. So even though
do you know where that's going to be?
Interesting that you should ask me that. No, I don't.
Okay. I was just wondering if it does it make a difference, because it's Tuskegee normally has, and if it's down there, it's going to be just insane, because that is one of the most rabid fan bases anywhere in football, not just the SIAC, but they travel well, they are dedicated to their school, and they love their Tigers. So I would think that Miles would have their hands full having to deal with them on that. But I want to pull away for a second and bring in our producer for the show, Ricky Hampton, and talk about what happened at East Lake Country Club here in Atlanta at the FedEx Cup, where Tiger Woods won for the first time in 5 years. He won his 80th major. He almost won, the FedEx Cup, the tour championship for the year, which would have netted him a check for $10 million had he been able to hold on to that three-stroke lead that he had coming down the stretch. But, Ricky, are you there with us?
What's going on, fellas? Man, I've enjoyed this show tonight. I love the interview with Parnell Dickinson. Hey, he's like Ali. It ain't bragging if you can back it up.
Right?
No brag, just facts.
Right.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. But, hey, that was a fun. That was a fun weekend, man. You know, you guys know I'm a big golf fan, and I actually had a chance to cover Tiger quite a bit during my columnist days. He would come to Michigan for the Buick Open in Flint, and I used to do the U.S. Open and PGA and Masters, so got to see him down there. And at that time, he was just on top of the world, and he was a world beater. But, guys, the big thing now, he's healthy, so he can practice. You have to put in the work with this game. I mean, you just don't lose the talent this guy had. It's just that you don't wake up one day and can't play anymore. But if you don't practice, you can lose that touch it takes to make the shots. And he was slowly able to work his way back. I mean, you could see it coming over the year. He's played well all year. He hadn't won. But for anybody else, man, it would be a tremendous year. Of course, Tiger, we always talk about him winning. So it wasn't really a surprise that he won. But you know what got me, guys? Everybody said, well, he needs to win this. He doesn't need to win. He doesn't need to par another hole. His legacy is set. He's either the greatest golfer ever or he's the second greatest golfer ever. There's only two guys in that room. That's Jack Nicklaus and Tiger. And I'm of mine. Tiger's the best I've ever seen. But if somebody wants to give it to Jack, you know, I won't even argue that, because Jack was that good.
Well, Ricky,
okay, Jack has 82 majors, right?
Jack
has
82
majors?
Jack has 18 majors and 73 PGA Tour victories. Tiger
okay,
has 14
Tiger's behind
majors.
Him for some reason. Yeah.
He's behind him in
so
majors.
Tiger is three behind him. Yeah.
He's four behind him. Tiger has 14. Jack has.
Well,
Tiger has
one
more. Yeah, go ahead, Roscoe.
Let me ask you this. So is do you feel that, you know, Tiger is – he's back, that this is going to be what he does going forward, or was this sort of a blip? I know you said that
now,
he's able to practice now.
It's not a blip, but I cannot see him dominating the way he did in his prime. I mean, he's 42. That's in golf. You're an old man at 42. You're getting ready for the senior tour. I mean, you really start winding it down. Only one guy had a lot of success after 40, Vijay Singh, who I think he won like 12 times after 40. Now, Tiger is capable of that, but it all depends upon how his back holds up. Can he win another major? Yeah. Yeah, he almost won two this year.
Yeah.
And,
Will this weekend mean anything in terms of saying he could put back-to-back strong efforts? I mean, they're in France, right, for the Ryder Cup. Are you going to be able to tell anything from that kind of match play at all?
I've never been a big fan of the Ryder Cup. And America used to win all the freaking time. And, you know, they lose a couple of times, and we lose a couple of times. Now it's become such a big thing. I mean, golf is not a team sport. Even though I played golf in college on a golf scholarship, it's still you are judged by what you do as an individual. You know, Sergio Garcia is a great Ryder Cup player. Colin Montgomery is a great Ryder Cup player. But both of them have failed for the most part in terms of winning majors. Sergio finally got one. You're judged by your majors. So to me, I mean, this is much ado about nothing. I'm going to watch it, but it doesn't define anybody's legacy as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Well, I just wanted a couple of notes from Sunday that they showed that NBC has shown that the ratings from last year's FedEx Cup to this year were up 206% when Tiger was out there playing and in the hunt. It's the highest rated FedEx Cup in history, and it's the highest rated tour event on record. And they talk about this from televising from 2000 to 2018 for these type of events, but this is the highest. Sunday was a ratings bonanza and a great lead-in to Sunday Night Football, of course. But that's quantifiable, the impact of a strong Tiger Woods has on professional golf, men's golf.
Oh man, he's the needle, he's the engine. I mean, we got some really really fine players out there today. Some of these young guys. But and I love Phil for saying this. He said, "Man, but there's been nobody like Tiger Woods." And he was trying to tell these kids, you know, everybody, "Well, what about Tiger? What about Tiger?" Phil, you say, "Man, you don't want to see the guy that I dealt with. I'm telling you, you don't want to see the guy." And back to what Roscoe said. And back to what Roscoe said, he can't be that guy at 42 where he's going to go out and just run over people and put people and step on their necks, but he will be good enough to win. He's always going to have a chance at Augusta. He's always going to have a chance at the British Open, and the other two majors. It just depends on where they play. Like next year, they go to the home of golf, St. Andrews. They go to Pebble Beach. One of my greatest experiences as a sports writer was covering the 2000 U.S. Open, and you know, Johnny Miller, to his credit, called the tournament after the eighth hole of the first day when Tiger hit an 8-iron into the par 5 number 8. I don't know if he made the eagle putt, but he hit it out of the tough rough, and Johnny said, "This thing is over. It's not even a fair fight." And he went on to win by 12 shots. So he is a phenomenon, you know, just like you said, 206 improvement.
206%. Yeah,
on an NFL Sunday, fellas. I mean, the guy's something. He's the best I've ever seen. Yeah, and whether he wins again or not, I mean, the guy has done his damage. He's got 14 majors. So, and I say this quickly. I know we don't have much time. The reason why I can give Tiger the nod and I can make the same argument for Jack is Jack played, he dominated. Jack dominated, and he was a beast. But he was really beating Americans. He had to deal with Gary Player from South Africa. He had to deal with Tony Jacklin from Europe. But that was it. Tiger took on the world. You had guys, you had VJ coming from the Fiji Islands. You had the start of the European players winning majors. Nick Faldo and some of those guys come over there. And he beat them all. And now you got a whole new group. He's not going to be able to beat these guys like he did them simply as you guys well know, that Father Time is undefeated. So, and he's just, and it's not like he's winning the John Deere Open. This guy, people are talking about, well, he needs to get a victory. And I'm like, hey, if he do that, he playing the John Deere Open or the Memphis Open. He's always played in elite fields. But look, you got me going about Tiger. I can go on. I'm going to close my mouth right now.
That's all right. Well, we're out of time anyway, so we can keep on going and going. And we'll have a post-mortem on the Ryder Cup and just the weekend in football and the start of the baseball playoffs next week. So let's talk about those things next week. You guys have been listening to – it's been a great show tonight, Roscoe.
Thanks, so, and I look forward to next week. It'll be another night in paradise with, you know, just talking sports and kicking it around, you know, the winners and the losers and, you know, whatever else is happening in the world of sports.
All right, then. For Roscoe Nassis and Tim Turner, we'll see you guys next time.